The Transportation Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. We have a quorum, and would someone that has looked at the minutes move the minutes, please? Representative Morgan. Representative Morgan moves the minutes of January 25th. Any discussion or corrections? If not, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Presented. Today, we're going to continue the agenda we had the other day, review basically of the MnDOT and some of the metro area projects. And we have, again, a Metro District Engineer, Connie Sahijapan. Getting close, aren't I, Connie?
Go ahead, John.
Welcome to the
committee. Close enough for government work. thank you very much, Mr. Chair. In your packets, you have a set of slides, which I don't have it, unfortunately, on there, but you can follow along. And then you also have some one-pagers on these projects, which you can read at your leisure later. I think I have a total of about 45 minutes, and I'd like to leave about 10 minutes at the end to show you some a couple of videos that might be interesting for everybody to see the magnitude of these two projects, two of the projects that we're talking about today, one on the Crosstown project and one on the St. Croix River crossing.
That'd be fine, because I think we're very interested in basically the projects and also the cost, basically the cost, because we're looking at budget items.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. In your package there, you see a set of PowerPoints. The first one is on the 35W Crosstown project. First, I'd like to, before I get into some of the history that the project is being advertised tomorrow, there's a lot of, it's been up and down quite a bit recently, and it's going to be advertised for 2 months, I believe, and then March 30th will be the letting date for this big project. And we're very happy about it, because every time you move a big project like this through the system, they just sent a 1,000-page plan to the Federal Highway Administration for the second time. And so we're very excited about that. Hopefully we're going to have some bidders on the project, which I think we will. The first bullet takes us back a little bit to 2001, when the project was originally designed. Then it was felt by the legislature that it was not designed adequately, and so the project was stopped. It was due to lack of capacity is what was felt, and also we had a couple of closures, multi-year closures in a couple of different directions that was not satisfactory. So we were told to go back to the drawing board. We did that, and we came up with a redesign. Obviously, the redesign, we had to take more property and build more lanes, so it cost a lot more. And in April of 2006 is when we put the project back out to bid. At that time, the federal funds were not flowing through the system fast enough, and we were not anticipating as much federal funds that would be available for this project. And we came up with a financing plan. Proposed to ask the contractor to provide the financing for a couple of years during the construction. So it was starting in 2006, and in 2007 and 8, the contractor would carry the bills, and then we would pay him in 2009, when our federal funds came. But that created some issues with a couple of the contractors. A couple of them dropped out, and they didn't feel they could do this. They basically wanted a guarantee from us, and legally we couldn't provide a guarantee, although we've always paid our bills, and we thought it could, it was a doable process. There was one contractor that, at the time that was, that had the financing in place. However, they realized they were the only ones, and they felt the price was a lot higher than our estimate. Our estimate at the time was $250 million, and their price was a lot higher, and it being the single bidder, and they knew that they did not provide a bid, and so we basically had no bid. So there's a lot of debate about that, whether that was the right way of doing business or not, but it was a way of, it was a solution at the time that we had, and it did not work. We hired a national consultant to help us with the different items in the project to see what the reason was that they felt the project was more expensive than our estimate, and they helped us with that. So basically the project cost went up, and as you see there, our current estimate is now $285 million that we have on that project. We are proposing to start construction to June of 2007 if we get an acceptable bid. I'm very confident we have some hungry contractors that will submit a bid on this project. This project is a very important project regionally, as you've heard before. It is not the local people, the people in Richfield and Minneapolis so much that are pushing it. There's a bigger push comes from the people driving from down south going to downtown and east, north, also east-west. And it is a big project. I think it will be the biggest project that we have led, biggest highway project that we have led in the department. Other than the LRT was around $600 million. That was a rail project. I think this one will be the biggest roadway contract that we've had. So we're breaking new records. And that is a point I'd like to make. The cost, you know, $285, you can round it up to, let's call it $300. In our district, in the metropolitan district, that's about how much federal and state dollars we have to per year. From gas tax and other revenues, and so it is difficult.
Sorry, John?
Yes.
Would you just kind of expound on that? Basically, when you say that's pretty much your total contract construction budget for the metro district, right? Is that what you're saying?
$300 million is a sum of state and federal dollars that we receive annually. It's about around that, and we use that money for many different things, for safety projects, pavement preservations, signal expansion, and purchasing right-of-way, and all those different things.
In actuality, you could use all the money you have in one project. I guess that's the point.
You could look at it that way. Although let's say if I had a $500,000 house, and I could buy a $500,000 house, but I don't make that much, you know. So we have a lot of other things we need to do also with that $300 million. So that's what makes it difficult to push a big. The point I'm trying to make is to fund these big mega projects. They're mega for us here in this part of the world. $300 million. It is difficult to do that with the level of funding that we have at this point. So that's why, and maybe at some point, sometime in the future, we can talk about some of our congestion management plans. We're looking at lower cost fixes. I think a lot of you are familiar with maybe those who drive in the metro area through St. Louis Park. We did a $7 million project on Trunk Highway 100, converted the shoulder into a lane, and that project, the full fix of that project is $135 million. Although we have to go back and do the full fix, that's what we owe to the cities, and we need to do it right. We have narrower lanes, 11-foot lane, but it pushes cars through. We have a lot higher throughput, so we need to look. We have been looking for more of those types of solutions instead of going in and digging things up and doing a major project. It's becoming more difficult.
Yeah, actually, too, for the committee, I think I just shouldn't have got ahead of you. I asked you about this one project, and I think you're going to be talking about other projects, too.
Right.
And so I just want to make certain that they're aware of that. Representative Morgan has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me just follow up on the Chair's question and make sure I understand clearly. So what you're saying is the current budget for Metro District projects next year would be entirely consumed by this one project?
No, I don't think we'll spend all our money on this project. What happens is the dollars for a project gets encumbered, and then it gets spent every year. So much gets spent as the contractor spends the money. Maybe the first year he spends 25%, the second year he spends 30%, 30%, and then the fourth year. All I was trying to do is give you an analogy of it's difficult to move big projects through the system.
Mr. Sahibam, I think you probably didn't. Your question.
May I follow up, Mr. Chair? Yes, thank you. Then let me re-ask the question. So what you're saying is this is not how much this project would cost next year. You're saying that this is the total cost of the project over several years,
right?
But it just happens to be the amount that is budgeted for Metro District projects.
That is correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
That answered your question?
Yes.
Okay, I guess you can proceed, please.
I'll proceed. Okay, so we decided to do this project. It is an important project, and we're going to move it through the system. And the next slide, you can move to the next page. It just gives you a picture of the, on the left is what it looks like now, and on the right in yellow and red is what it's going to look like. And again, we'll have a nice little video, which I'm sure you'll like. Now let's move on to the next.
Representative Beard had a question.
Mr. Chair, actually, Representative Morgan followed up on it because I didn't want the committee to have the impression we were flattening the bank account for next year. And Mr. Carney did a good job explaining that it was a cash flow management problem, and so it worked itself out. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Representative Kalin has a question.
Representative Morgan and I were just talking about whether to ask this question now or later, but looking ahead a little bit, and I know because my wonderful area manager who's in the audience, Mike Thompson, is working on this project as well, with the Sinclair River crossing that is going to be that soon, not this year, but soon, is, what is it, 1.6 times the size of the Crosstown Commons? So,
That is the third project I'll talk about, Mr. Chair and Representative. Yes, that'll break the record when that will start.
And summing up,
Mr. Chair, just to point out that North Branch was a $21 million project. That when we're sort of looking at not as sort of flattening out the bank account, but also working with flattening out the bank accounts at the same time, that these other projects of great significance throughout the metro region and elsewhere. But I think in the context of these massive projects which have to get done, just following up on Representative Morgan's question, I think it's something to think about. And these are really important projects.
Right.
But that cash management and the base funding is really, really critical here.
And I think, again, before Mr. Sahibam gets going, again, they can let these multiple projects is a large amount because they don't pay all the money in 1 year. But in essence, the total amount of the project, of one project, could eat up your total budget for 1 year. You didn't, the way the projects are spent out, you only spend so much money each year, and but you have to obligate that money or encumber it, and you don't allocate it or spend it out.
Mr. Chair, in fact, on some of our big projects, we are, because of the level of revenues and how it comes in and how often and how much, we are forced to put a maximum payout curve, and you saw that word in the Crosstown slides, where you can't pay any more than a certain amount per month or per year on a project, so you need to slow it down because the money is not coming in as fast.
It's in your contract documents.
It will be in a contract document, and the contract was bid that way. Yes. Okay, so we move the big project back in, which is the Crosstown project. Now, the cost went up, as I mentioned earlier. That means something's got to give, because we didn't get any extra money during that time. So something's got to give, and we worked hard on it. We have a lot of, just like having children, you love them all, you want to take care of them all. In this case, we had to defer one of them, and we called the temporary deferral. That's the Devil's Triangle project. We talked to you a little bit last time when I was here. Just to give a little overview of the project, this project is up on Highway One, up in Brooklyn Park, basically Highway 169 and County Road 81. It is an intersection that ranks third and sixth, respectively, for crash costs in the state. And when you hear some of the folks from up in that area talk about it and defend it, you see how important it is as people drive through there. we have some dangerous upgrade railroad crossings with and we've had fatalities in those areas. So the project would address safety and congestion by eliminating signals and upgrade crossing. And it would basically be an interchange project that you won't have any signals when you're done. Now, if you move on to the next slide, the Triangle 169 Triangle Project. Some people call it the Devil's Triangle. We try to soften it up, call it the Triangle Project. Although a couple of weeks ago at the Met Council, when I was giving this presentation, somebody said you need to put the name Devil back in there because it reminds people of things. So the project was in order to balance our program, we had to, the Federal Highway Administration used to authorize the project, so they asked us to, you need to balance your STIP, your State Transportation Improvement Program. So we had to go through all that process, and that is all done. And by, so something had to give, and this was the, I call it the low-hanging fruit for the next expansion project. And we had to choose between, I've had to answer this question many times, why did you pick this one? Do you think it's so important? You have accidents there, you have some important projects, a congestion problem. The answer is, well, where else is it going to come from? We have pavement preservation is very important to us. We have fallen behind in our pavement preservation. And sure, when you ride in our metro area, also outstate, you know, our pavements, we have had a hard time keeping up with it. It gets speed up quite a bit by traffic and salt. So we chose to keep our pavement preservation program going and chose this project. Now, as we mentioned last time, and now it's a reality, that that the governor in his transportation package has $100 million worth of infusion into the transportation system. Although I don't think the proposal mentioned projects where the money should go, and I don't think that normally happens. But assuming that some of that money would come to the metro district, as a metro district engineer, I've committed that the first place that would go is to bring this project back on track. So the deferral, I call it a temporary deferral, could be anywhere from 2 months to 2 years. Right now, on paper, it shows 2 years, 2009. If no other funding becomes available, we moved it out 2 years, new additional funding. the $100 million proposal is there from the governor's package. Let's just say, for the sake of discussion, the legislature approves that pretty quick. Let's say we'll take that off the table and approve that one. Then I think the Devil's Triangle project will be right back on track, and we'll be committed to put that back on the back on schedule. The second bullet talks about our commitment with that, and I have mentioned it to the folks up there. We are continuing with the design of that project. We are working on all the agreements and all our approvals, municipal consent process, and all of that. We're pretending the money is there. We've shown our commitment that we will do the project and we'll be ready when the funds are available. I'll read the last bullet. When the funding is identified, the project will be ready to construct. Okay. Okay. We are prepared, and MnDOT is preparing to return the project to 2007 construction season. So that's that's if any kind of additional funding package passes to the legislature.
Mr. Shaharbyam.
Yes.
How much is the estimated cost? I don't think you said that.
No, the total project cost is, Mr. Chair, is $50 million. Of that $50 million, I believe $35 to $40 million is MnDOT cost. The rest is Hennepin County and City of Brooklyn Park.
Along that same line, on the other Crosstown project, are some of the county or municipality, is any funds in that other than...
There is participation by locals, yes. There is transit dollars in there. There is city and county funds in that project.
In the Crosstown.
But majority of it is...
Excuse me.
Yes.
Is that included in your... That's outside of your estimated cost that you gave us?
No, that's part of it.
That's part of it.
$285 million is a total project. estimate. And I can't remember when Mr. Tom O'Keefe comes to run the animation, maybe he can give us the detailed numbers. But the $285 is the total cost. So, as far as Double Triangle go, hopefully I'll get your mind at ease. That project we're committed, and we'll do that one if additional dollars becomes available. One thing I forgot to mention, if all of those things fail, we are working with Hennepin County to possibly bond for the trunk Devil's Triangle, which means that the county would put up the money now and that we will pay them back in 2 years when the funds are available in our program. And we have done things like that before in some other interchanges. So that's doable.
Representative Kalen.
Thank you, Representative Leader, Mr. Chair. Good question. What's the debt service cost over those 2 years if the county gets bonded?
I'm not a financial guy. We have some folks in the audience. I better not throw out numbers. 5%? 5% a year, something like that. If you want, I can get you the accurate numbers.
Representative Essenson, we also have developed some figures. Corinne or Matt, I'm sorry, I forget the last name. We do have the total bonded indebtedness that the MnDOT has and the counties had and the municipalities, and I think we've got some figures on that too. Right? So we do have those figures, I believe.
Chair?
Yes.
I just think it's helpful every time that the local governments are taking the lead and doing the anticipatory bonding here, that we understand it is an increased cost to taxpayers, local or state, and that's having a real effect on the transportation picture statewide.
And I think that's one of the things we have. We're going to give the committee, we're going to give the committee the numbers to show how much the municipalities, counties, and cities have upfronted for MnDOT. We've got those figures put together. We just haven't put anything back in the whole works yet.
Thank you for clarifying that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard had a question.
Just a comment along these lines. Mr. Connie, I don't know how long you've been at MnDOT, but it seems to me, I remember from just transportation lore, that when the crosstown was originally built, it was either the city of Edina or Hennepin County advanced substantial sums to keep that project on track going back 40 or 50 years, however long it's been, because they wanted the access and the construction season moved ahead and didn't want it delayed. And then MnDOT paid them ahead. And I think in Scott County right now, at the 169 interchange, I think the county advanced the funds to complete that project ahead of time so that it would move up on the MnDOT schedule. So it's done routinely, folks. It's nothing.
It's pretty routinely done, right?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we also did one on Highway 52 and County Road 46 down in Dakota County. We had some fatalities there. That interchange was fronted by Dakota County, and we'll be paying them back in 2009 or 10, I believe. And that one, and I think there's one up on Anoka County, Hanson Boulevard, over Highway 10.
And that's just the one you're speaking of, are only in the Metro District. There's some outside the Metro District, pretty substantial, too.
Okay. Let's move over to the east side of town. St. Clair River Crossing. And this is my last project that I was going to talk about. As you may remember, many, many years ago, I think it was in the mid-90s, I think it was like four district engineers ago that they tried to build this project. And at the time, this project was a regional priority. The funding was all there for it, and it was all stopped because of legal action. There was a negative finding by the National Park Service in, I think, 96 to 97 that prevented us to get permits from the Corps of Engineers and the Coast Guard. So we had to stop, and the court upheld that in 98. So the project basically went away for a while. Then there was a three-year stakeholder process that was completed in 2006, which resulted into a buildable project. Now, that's where we are now. what is the stakeholder process that I'm talking about here? It all started with a, back in 2003, there was a presidential order. It put seven projects nationally on a, we called it projects of national significance that they wanted to. There was a process, I believe Congressman Oberstar was part of it, streamlining the environmental process. A few pictures, environmental process approval goes like this way. Now we're going like this with a stakeholder. Big group, the Federal Highway Administration was part of it, and we were, obviously we were part of it, and it took 3 years to get through that, and we have a, we have an approved layout now on a location. There was many different alternate locations were reviewed different from where it was, and I think it's back to almost to where it was. It's a little different on the east side where it touches the Wisconsin side, but basically it goes through the same area. So this project received some very high level support all the way from the president down to from the federal government. Now you come to 2005 and 6, 7 now, and the, if we were to fund a project like this with our dollars as a state, again, 10 years ago, it was a regional important project. Now it'll have a hard time competing, to be honest with you, with a lot of the needs that we have in the, within the metro area, inside the ring or the ring itself, as you're well aware. So the only way I think the way that this project would be able to go forward is by either receiving federal dollars, getting a federal grant, which I don't know if it'll happen or not, but that's we're working toward that. If you move over to the next slide, we'll talk about the next steps. We have started implementing some mitigation packages that was part of the approval process, some small contracts of $25 million worth of federal money that was earmarked for this project that we're working on that was part of the approval. The municipal consent process is underway. There's three cities, the city of Stillwater, Oak Park Heights, and Bayport. We have municipal consent from Stillwater and Bayport, Oak Park Heights, where we don't have that yet. And we're working with the Wisconsin DOT. They're partners with us on this one, and they tell us that they're ready to go whenever we are. The way they program their system, they're able to come up with the dollars when they need to. I think they only program 3 years out, so they can decide that they'll fund this project when it's ready. As I said earlier, this project, we have a hard time competing right now. So if we were to fund this project with our traditional dollars, with our regular dollars that we have now, it would be a 2024. That's the time frame that we're looking at. The problem with that would be that at that time, the cost of the project would be so high that you wonder if there's a cost benefit if you want to do a project that big. At the bottom of the sheet, you see the last bullet talks about in 2010, the cost of the project is $435 million. Our share is about $275.
Mr. Shahiba,
yes.
Is that restricting the structure? Is that the approaches and everything? Or is that, contract cost or is it project cost?
Mr. Chair, that is total cost, approaches and the bridge.
So there would be no work other than...
And the right of
connections in it.
And the delivery, the design, and everything else.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we're borrowing from everybody else, local units, the government, kind of contractors, have you tried the state of Wisconsin to see if they would fund it since they apparently have the money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, no, we haven't tried that approach yet, but tomorrow some of our folks are flying to Wisconsin actually to talk about this project. Maybe they'll run it by them.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A few years ago when this issue was before us, though I am not normally a supporter of toll roads, I thought this was a good project, and I offered a bill that said if this was built, it would have to be a toll bridge. And I never heard from anyone in Minnesota about it, but I was editorialized against in Wisconsin. So it was clear evidence to me that we are building this particular project for people in Wisconsin who want to come to the state.
Mr. Sahib-Jum.
Yes.
Is there, with the status of this, is there a probability that some or other that could become a toll bridge?
Mr. Chair, I think it's becoming evident that this project, for this project to go, we're going to need some, and in the third bullet I'm talking about innovative and blended funding needs. We have to look at different ways of funding it. I think there will be a big lump sum of money, $300-400 million from the federal government that will come down. I don't know. And I don't think we can fund it like we talked about earlier with our with our dollars. It'll have a hard time competing. So what would have to happen, I think, and there is a lot of interest out there in the private world, and they have contacted our federal highway office and us that they're private people, business minds that are interested in obviously it'll have to have benefit for them, looking to become partners in helping fund this thing, and then that concept that Representative Hausman mentioned, the toll would be a part of that. And there is not enough, as you know, there's not enough traffic on this bridge to fund the whole thing. That's a lot of money for that amount of traffic. I believe the traffic count is 40,000-50,000 by the in like 20 years. So that's not a lot of cars. So, however, it will provide funding for a part of it. The numbers could vary anywhere from 25 to 35%, something like that is what I've seen. And Nick Thompson can help me if I needed the help. So that is an option. And we are working with Wisconsin very carefully. We met with them once. Right off the bat, the point was that tolls are out. However, when we talk to them and say, well, that's one way, that's one of the pieces of the puzzle that can help us deliver this project, then they listen. So, as I said, we have a group of folks, some of our financial folks are going to Wisconsin tomorrow to continue discussions with us about this project, and I think this is the time for this project to happen. I think if you wait too much longer, 20 years, it'll be too heavy, I think, cost-wise. All stars are aligned. We have the environmental approvals for the project. It has support. It's a project of national significance, and in order to declare victory, and a couple of weeks ago we were in Washington visiting with Congressman Oberstar, and he was asking about his environmental streamlining process, or if he used that. He said yes, the St. Clair River project was one of them, in order to declare victory and show the nation that this works, I think we have to build it and have a ribbon cutting. That's what I think.
Mr. Sahib-Jum, two questions. We have some others, but when you go to Wisconsin, could you just kind of suggest that maybe there's a kind of an attitude, at least with some of the legislators, that it should be a toll road? That's one thing. The other thing is, how long can that design stand if you let another 5 years? You'd probably go into redesign again, wouldn't you? Or not, Mr. Side?
Yes, we have not fully designed the project. The design would take us another 3 years to do. We have preliminary design. We have a concept design of the structure itself and the layout of the approaches. So you're right, though. If you wait too long, new things happen and things may have to change again. So I think this is the time for it.
Representative Nelson?
I was going to be kind, and I guess I'm going to. Connie knows that my concern is the Devil's Triangle, seeing as how that sits mostly in my district, and so I've got great concern about getting that one done. But I guess the question, when you were talking about that and Crosstown, is what happens if the bids, for Crosstown come over to $300 million. We're up there in the $350 to $400 million when the bids are opened up in March. What happens to all these projects and their stepping order as they go? I mean, somebody's going to start disappearing off even farther into the sunset.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we will have a problem, I think, if the bid's coming at $250 to $400 million. Obviously, we won't be able to afford that, and that will be a decision that we would have to make as a department. How important is that project, and is it worth $400 million? Right now, that is the most important project on our system. I think it's they've called it the lump in the anaconda that we're trying to push through the system, and it's becoming more and more difficult. If you don't do it, you got to do it next year. And what is it next year? Then the year after. So it won't be $400 million.
Representative Nelson?
I guess that kind of teases up my other question here, which I wrote down here, is when you're talking about the added cost as we delay this stuff, approximately what was the cost or the estimated cost back in the 90s when the State River Crossing Bridge was first, the St. Croix River Crossing Bridge was first proposed? Do you have those figures? Or
770? Mr. Chair, it was a total of $150 million, Representative Nelson.
Was that our cost, or the total? That was both Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Wisconsin?
Total.
Okay.
Representative Hausman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As many years as I've heard about this, I don't know that I had ever, that number that you just gave before had ever just sort of registered with me. What was the number again of cars per day? Was that cars per day that you gave us on the same price for
crossing? Yes. I believe I said 50,000 cars. Huh? 50,000 cars per day by 2030.
By 2030. Do you know what it is today?
19,000 to 20,000, Mr. Chair, Representative House.
Today, we have 19,000 to 20,000 cars per day going, and we are contemplating a project cost of $484 million. When would we ask the cost-benefit question of that? Given the fact that there is a bridge that those cars have access to on a highway that gets in the cost.
Mr. Chair, Representative Houseman, there are other parts of this reasons that this project is important, and that is the number of crossings we have going to Wisconsin, and the one down in 94, although I don't think that's at capacity, but I think that soon could be. And I think that's, and if you've driven through Stillwater, that bridge is not adequate. And I think for that reason, I think it's important that the project goes through. The cost-benefit issue, I'll be honest with you, there's you're not going to get an 8 to 1, 10 to 1 cost-benefit on most transportation projects. So, but we do look at cost-benefit, and it is important. So, I don't know if we have a cost-benefit analysis on this project. This is a 61 benefit in 2004. Mr. Chair, would you like us to provide some information on that?
Do you want that represented?
Personally, I mean, if they not to prepare it, but if you happen to have it in the file, I don't think it needs to come before the committee.
Unless you have it, that you wouldn't have to go through any extra work, why we wouldn't need it.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll provide it to Representative Hausman. So if there are no questions, I'd like to show you visualization. The first one...
If I may, just before you get into that, or at least before you leave, Mr. Sahijam, right. I'd like to ask you again a question about the Wakota Bridge cost, or not basically the cost, but we're anticipating additional cost that's going to happen there. That would be in your normal, that would have to be in this construction year too, basically, wouldn't it?
Mr. Chair, the Wakota project, yeah, we have some dollars. Obviously, that was encumbered, like I mentioned earlier, a couple of weeks ago, for that bridge that we have eliminated from the contract. That's around $22-23 million. So we de-encumber that fund, and then we also set aside some dollars for the additional cost, and that will be part of that, and we set that aside, hopefully for the, that we can relet that project in, hopefully in the fall, relet that. So we have set aside a certain amount for that project to be relet. We believe it's adequate. So, again, it will depend on where the mercy of the bid. So if it's higher, then we have to make some decisions on that.
And one other question about your budget. Have you had transfers out of your maintenance and your construction?
Transfers from our operating dollars?
Right.
No.
No?
No.
I think the other districts have. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I don't know.
Maintenance monies? My understanding was, and I was just wondering if you had and what the amounts would roughly have been.
Okay. No, I don't think we have.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, maybe we're, you know, we do, with our maintenance forces, we do some mill and overlays, maybe pothole fixing and some construction, but it's not a, you know, contract letting with the contractors, so.
No, I was just thinking, plain outright transfer, shift from one, from the maintenance to the operator, to the construction. Okay. I think we're ready for your video.
We have two. We have two videos. One is the crosstown with Tom O'Keefe is our west area manager, and Mr. Nick Thompson is our east area manager, who will show a little video on the St. Croix project. So,
okay.
Chair, excuse me, Chair Leader, members of the committee. I've actually got two videos for the 35W crosstown project. The first shows the highway.
Would you identify yourself too for the record?
Oh, please? Sure. I'm Tom O'Keefe from MnDOT Metro District. I'm the West Area Manager.
Thank you.
The two animations I'll show for the crosstown project, the first shows basically the highway construction. The second shows a special transit feature that's a part of the project. I'll launch right into it. Right here we're looking at the current situation on the crosstown on Highway 62. Penn Avenue is in the upper part of the screen, crossing the screen. You can see the Lund store in the upper right there. So this... as this video proceeds, you'll see the existing condition on the top of the screen and the proposed condition on the bottom. So we're heading to the east towards the Crosstown Commons. You can see Penn Avenue there. And as it catches its breath, it'll the proposed condition will start on the bottom of the screen. So there you can see the project starts. The first part of the project here, we're widening to the south, taking some homes in the city of Richfield. Overall, we balance the takings between Minneapolis and Richfield. So we're approaching the common section. Part of the reason the project was stopped in 2001 is because we had very long closures of the major movements during construction. With this design, we avoid those closures because, as you can see, we're building bridges offline with the existing bridges, so we can leave the existing bridges open while we build the new bridges. You can see the bridge on the right there will be able to be built as we keep the old ones open. Another part of the reason the project was stopped in 2001 was a lack of capacity included. That project had only one lane for the movement from eastbound 62 to northbound 35W. You can see here on the right where the 6 and the 62 is, there are two lanes for that connection now. So this is moving through the Crosstown Commons. The two highways are separated with 35W in the middle and 62 on the outside. We're doubling the amount of lanes in the Crosstown Commons from the 6 that are there today to 12 or 13, depending on where you are in the Commons. You can see the diamond lane in the middle. That's the HOV bus rapid transit lane that will be built, extended up to 46th Street with this project. So now we're turning to the north. Here we take some homes on the left side of the screen in the city of Minneapolis. This project reconstructs approximately 4 miles of 35W, approximately 2 miles of 62, so a total of 6 miles of of multi-lane freeway. From this point north, we do not take any additional right-of-way. The 62 roadway is on the left of the screen here. You'll exit to go either east or west if you're southbound out of Minneapolis at about Diamond Lake Road under this design. So we eliminate those forced weaving movements that are part of the project. There are a total of about 280,000 vehicles a day that use the freeway in this project area. It's consistently identified as one of the worst interchanges in the nation, and usually the worst in Minnesota. So moving north, the 35W in the section will be 5 lanes in each direction. Today it's 3 lanes, so we'll add an additional general purpose lane plus the HOV BRT lane. Approaching the northern project limits, which are at 42nd Street. The next animation I'll show you is a bus station, an online transit station at 46th Street, which you'll be able to see in the median of the freeway in just a second here. You can see the exits from the HOV lanes to the station area. This animation doesn't have the station architecture included in it. You'll see more clearly in the next animation how that transit station works. Construction will proceed somewhat slower than the animation. We start construction in June. Completion should be at the end of 2010. So this is the transit station I mentioned. Buses will pull out of the HOV lanes, enter the station. They have to cross over to get their doors on the correct side of the platform, the doors on the right. Buses on 46th Street will drop passengers. Others will arrive on foot or on bike, take elevators or stairways to the freeway level. This animation doesn't really show accurately what's now being planned, which the freeway level will be enclosed. Doors will open automatically only when a bus is in the station and ready to take on passengers. So there'll be sliding doors. It'll be pressurized to keep pollutants out of the station area itself. This is a conceptual design. MetTransit's proceeding with the architecture development, which looks somewhat different from what you saw there. So that's the presentation. Any questions?
That's strictly a transfer station. There's no access other than from the buses itself, like an overhead or a walk or anything. Strictly transfer, right?
Bus transfer, and people can walk up or bike up.
Right.
Yep.
I'm Mr. Chair.
Representative Ayer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bus, the north from the Crosstown proper to the 46 is going to be lanes are going to be expanded, but within existing right-of-way.
That's correct.
And then you go down again to the 3 lanes or whatever it is north of there?
Chair and Leader, Representative Earhart, the existing situation is it's 4 lanes in each direction today, 4 lanes general purpose north of 46th Street. We do have a future project planned that will extend this HOV bus rapid transit lane into downtown. That's scheduled for sometime after 2024 with current funding.
Any further, Representative Hollisman?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just wondering whether, given the fact that we have the subject before us today, whether they're trying to suggest the concept of a black hole to us.
Well, Chairman Leader, Representative Hausman will change our screen saver.
Got one more about a 3-minute deal
okay.
For the St. Croix project.
Thank you very much for that video.
My name is Nick Thompson, the East Area Manager for MnDOT Metro District, and I'm going to try to show you this visualization for the St. Croix River Crossing project.
Mr. Chair, he's one of the guys that will be going to Wisconsin tomorrow.
It's a good thing he's young, Connie.
This is an animation that we just completed. It's actually 14 minutes, but we'll be skipping through parts of it It was just shown at open house to the public in the last 2 weeks. This roadway is 6 miles. It's the bridge. Let's skip through here. It's a bridge river crossing, but it's also 6 miles of new roadway also in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Includes a new interchange with Highway 36 and 95, which you're seeing here. This is on the Minnesota side of the river, looking southwards from Oak Park, or from Stillwater and Oak Park Heights as you cross the new river crossing. This bridge is approximately 1 mile south of the existing lift bridge. And the existing lift bridge will be retained when this bridge is constructed. However, it'll be converted to a bicycle pedestrian facility, and there'll be a 6 mile loop trail between the new bridge and the lift bridge in downtown Stillwater. I'm going to fast forward here through this project. There, it includes reconstruction of Highway 36 on top of the hill in Oak Park Heights and Stillwater, with at-grade intersections remaining. Let's see here. This is what it looks like. This is a bridge type called an extrados bridge type. It has a cable stay type design to it. This was selected as a way to minimize the impact on the river crossing, minimize the number of piers in the river itself. If you're not familiar with the St. Croix River, it is actually a national park. There was a lot of concern about the impact of the river, of the bridge on the national park, and so the bridge type was selected in part to minimize impact on that park. Once you cross into Wisconsin, as we're crossing into now in this visualization, it goes through farm fields today, and it'll be a freeway type design linking up in St. Croix County with the existing four lane that was just completed this past fall by Wisconsin DOT, that continues all the way through Somerset and into New Richmond as a freeway with interchanges and a few crossings on it. But there's a one interchange constructed here at County Road E in the Wisconsin side as part of this project. Because the Minnesota side of the bridge has more complicated road structure, that's why Minnesota's cost is a little higher for this project than Wisconsin's. But the bridge itself is split in cost 50-50 between the two states. And from here on, it goes a couple more miles of a roadway like this through some fields. So,
is there about a 5 mile connection where it isn't from the Minnesota or from the river to the first divided highway?
Yeah,
like 5 miles?
It's 3 miles to the new road. Yep.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to go back to ask the cost on that Wakuta, the balance of the Wakuta bridge. You're doing the second phase. You already have the money in hand or allocated or whatever you call it?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Earhart, the cost of the Wakuta bridge, the original bid that the contractor provided back in 2002, their bid was $24 million. And that's the number that we would be de-encumbering. And then we're going to keep that. And then we also, in anticipation of additional costs because of the mistake in the design and all of that, we anticipate additional costs to that. And that was, I think we set aside another $20 million for that. So,
Mr. Chair,
but we don't know. I'm sorry, but we don't know what our total cost will be because we're discussing with the contractor. We think we can eliminate the work. The contractor says, "No, it's my job. You can't take it from me."
Representative,
Mr. Chairman, a lot of the interchange parts of that are already done, so that cost is out of the way now. So you're only looking at the bridge piece itself. And you're saying how much for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, is the bridge itself, again, the original bid that we received from this contractor was $24 million. And I think now it will be higher than that, and we set some money aside for it.
Okay.
The rest of the project is being completed now. The rest of that contract was a $120 million contract.
Mm-hmm.
That's all being done, and that's they're going to get paid for that.
Thank you.
The battle is that he doesn't want to, he says it's my baby, you can't take it away from me. We say, well, I think your cost is too high. We cannot justify it to the taxpayer. So that's where we are now.
Thank you.
No further questions? Thank you, Mr. Thompson, and thank you, Mr. Sahijam. We can appreciate you coming in and giving us all that information, because we certainly need it.
Anytime, anytime. Thank you very much.
Next, we'll overview the rural transit portion, and with I forget her title, but she's in charge of transit in MnDOT, Donna Allen. Welcome to the committee, Don.
Thank you.
I think you're director of rural, director of transit,
director
or
Metro. Director of the Office of Transit.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Donna Allen. I'm the director of the Office of Transit at MnDOT, and we appreciate the opportunity to be here today to talk to you a little bit about transit outside the seven county metro area. You should in your packet have a copy of the slides that we'll be going through. With me today is Tom Gottfried, who is the program section manager in our office. So we'll try to get this up right away, but in the interest of time, I'll go ahead and start. I'd like to tell you just a little bit about where we are in the organization at MnDOT. There are six divisions. The Office of Transit is located in the Program Management Division, and actually the director of that division, that position has been vacant, and recently an appointment was made, and Tim Hinkle is here in the audience. Tim? So Tim is the division director taking the position that was held previously by Randy Halverson, whom I'm sure many of you knew. The program management division contains the modal offices and also the Office of Investment Management for your information. And we have a number of activities. As I mentioned before, MnDOT has responsibility for public transit outside the seven county metro area. And as you know, the Met Council has responsibility here. Unlike the council, we don't operate transit service, but rather contract with others to do that. We have a number of responsibilities. I've laid out four, briefly speaking, implementing transit policies, establishing rules for grant making, helping systems comply with both state and federal regulations, of which there are many when it comes to transit, and also managing the transit investment, and that's kind of twofold. On the one hand, we are grant applicants. We apply to the federal government for funds that we use in combination with what the legislature appropriates to then grant to transit systems, and there are 61 systems in Greater Minnesota. We also provide a great deal of transit technical assistance, anything from helping systems start up a whole new system right down to helping with scheduling and dispatching guidance and so on. We also conduct transit system evaluations. what we're really doing is trying to help the systems make better use of the funding and provide better service. And we look for best practices, which we pass on to other systems. We are responsible for directing planning and research. We have done things like the Greater Minnesota Transit Plan, which is incorporated into the state's overall transportation plan. We recently, last year, completed the Minnesota Public Transit Human Services Coordination Study, and I'll speak just briefly to that a little later on. So those are the kinds of things that that we're involved with. I'm hoping we're going to have a visual here. If you look on page 3, you'll see a map that shows where these transit services are located and where we find the gaps. As I said, in 2001, we did a plan for Greater Minnesota Transit with the goal of providing 80% of the transit need by 2010. A measure that's in our transportation plan, and it constitutes the number of counties with countywide service. You can see on the map that there are 66 of our 80 counties that have what is called countywide service. That varies in level to some degree, but it does constitute service in not just one community, but in several within the county. And then there are seven counties that have service only in certain municipal areas, and seven that have no public transit service to date. And then at the bottom of this chart, you can see the increase in counties with service over the last few years. Another measure in our transportation plan is the number of bus service hours that are required to meet transit needs. That is the number of service hours that are provided in Greater Minnesota. And on that chart, the diagonal line shows the hours. And as I mentioned, we had a goal of 80%. By 2010, that would be 1.4 million hours. We anticipate this year to be at 980,000 hours. So that gives you a sense for where we are in that with that goal. We have a couple of important programs that are administered at the department. One is a program for public transit services, and the other is a program that provides grants for transportation of elderly people and people with disabilities. And I'd like to rather briefly go over those with you. First, the public transit service. As you saw from the map, we have projects operating throughout Greater Minnesota. They are open to the general public. These are not services that only provide for elderly people or people with disabilities. They provide, in many cases, work trips to school, and are used for all kinds of purposes, similar to the way transit is used in the metro area. We provided, through these systems, 9.7 or 8 million trips in 2006. That was up 3% from the year before, and we expect that there will be a significant increase this year. The service can be demand response. It can be route deviation. Route deviation is a bus route that will leave the specified route to pick up someone, say within a half mile, and get back on the route with notice, of course. There are fixed route services. There are combinations of those two. And in some cases, our rural systems use volunteer drivers to provide transportation where a bus wouldn't be a practical option. They range in size from the city of Duluth with about, I think Duluth has 85 vehicles now, 75 regular vehicles, and maybe 10 smaller vehicles that provide complementary paratransit services to people with disabilities. Right down to Dawson or Boston, which are essentially one bus systems that serve smaller communities. The operators typically are cities or counties, in some cases nonprofit organizations or regional organizations. They may be operated by the grant recipient themselves, or they may be contracted out to a private provider or other provider. And in our larger systems, like St. Cloud, Duluth, Rochester, Moorhead, La Crosse, and East Grand Forks, they are the systems that provide the service in our largest areas, our smaller urban areas. The vehicles are the kind that you might see on the street here in the Twin Cities, but in the smaller communities, smaller medium buses are used. These are usually 17 to 25 passenger buses. And all of this transportation is accessible to people with disabilities. So all of the buses have some sort of level-changing device, a lift or ramp. There are, as I mentioned, 61 transit systems. This is a quick breakdown. 12 multi-county systems. Examples would be Arrowhead Economic Opportunity Agency, AEOA, operates within seven counties in the northeast part of the state. Prairie 5, down in the southwestern part of the state, encompasses five counties with their service. There are 25 county-only services. That means that the service operates just within a single county. 23 municipal. The larger systems that I mentioned, like Duluth and St. Cloud, are in that group, and also a reservation. We have a public transit service on Red Lake Reservation.
Ms. Allen, could I just interject?
Certainly.
We want to get to your budget portion, too, so, you know, we end at 5:30, so just that you're aware of that. We did provide that. You have enough time. I didn't know if you put it in or not, but I don't want to cut you off.
We'll move right along. I think we'll be able to do it just fine. I thought it might be worthwhile to mention a couple of trends, things that we see going on in Greater Minnesota. First, the aging population. That's not a secret to anybody, but by 2025, some of these counties will have populations with 20 to 25% of people being over the age of 65. In the rural counties, that will probably be more prevalent, and they will likely have more of that population than we'll see in the metro areas. We have retirees moving out to more rural areas. In the North Central Lakes area, you see a lot of retirement homes that used to be cabins. We have a different economy, a service economy, where that will require shift work and different kinds of approaches to providing transportation. Many of our services are being located now in regional centers. There have been a lot of hospital closings over the last 20 years in Minnesota, and so we need to make sure that we can get people from the rural areas into these regional centers. And, of course, higher fuel costs and rising car insurance costs mean that transit is a more important option for some of our Greater Minnesota residents. Funding for these services is a three-way partnership, state, federal, and local, and you can see what the amounts of funding that are going into our operating assistance contracts for 2007. There are two state sources, the general fund and motor vehicle sales tax, MVES. And the locals provide a share, a fixed share, depending on the size of the community. And the next slide shows the funding partnership for capital. The largest of our systems receive formula grants. We received surface transportation program funding, STP funding, for vehicles in 2006. That is federal flexible funding that can be used for either highways or transit, and our area transportation partnerships are responsible for allocating those funds and did so in 2006 to the tune of $5.8 million. We also apply for discretionary funding. We don't always get it, but we apply for it at the federal level and did receive $2.3 in 2006. This legislature did appropriate $2 million in bond funds for facilities in the 2006 session. And if you turn to the next page, you will see the allocation of those funds to these transit systems. Actually, the picture that you see here is an opening that occurred this past year in Clipson, I believe, and that's from another grant year, but it gives you a sense for the buildings. $2 million in Greater Minnesota goes a long way in getting some of these facilities set up. I'm just very briefly going to go over the program that we administer for elderly people and people with disabilities. The recipients of these funds are typically nonprofit organizations. Others may participate. We have 129 of those organizations in the state, and this is a federal grant program. It provides 80% of the cost of vehicles and is, in most cases, only used for capital, not operating. We received $1.6 million in 2006 and funded 34 vehicles.
Ms. Allen, those are basically used, well, actually they're public, but basically they are not used by the public. Is that correct? I mean, they can be, but generally it's not many public people. It's usually the elderly and disabled, and they're short haul or long.
Mr. Chairman, these funds are used for vehicles to transport elderly people and people with disabilities, and they are often now coordinated with our public transit systems. So the primary purpose is to provide that transportation, particularly where there isn't public transit. But in any case where there's an opportunity, we are coordinating with some of the nonprofit organizations and using these vehicles to the greatest extent possible. This program also is not only Greater Minnesota, it serves agencies in the Twin Cities metro area as well. We are doing some other things. I mentioned the coordination plan. We've, under that plan, developed some best practices, which we're sharing. Had a forum with the Center for Transportation Studies at the U last year. A toolbox to help systems overcome the barriers to coordination with other transit providers. And an action plan under which we hope to implement some coordination pilots. We also pardon me, we also, in coordination with the Department of Human Services, have helped to fund some local coordination planning out in Greater Minnesota. We're creating connections with InterCity Bus as part of our federal funding. We are able to provide funding for InterCity where there is none to make the connections with our public transit systems. We're working with Jefferson Lines and have a number of subsidized lines. And we're encouraging transit and bicycle coordination, getting bike racks on buses so that people can ride their buses or their bikes to the bus and then get off and take them. We have a safety marketing program called Share the Road, which is a bicycle a bicycle marketing program that that shares rules of the road and has been picked up by a lot of folks. And we also have, under the Reauthorization Act, Safety Lou, a new program called Safe Routes to School. And that program is designed to enable kids to walk and bike to school. And it's both infrastructure and non-infrastructure. For example, an infrastructure program would be perhaps a gap in the sidewalk between a community and the school. And believe it or not, that happens. Sidewalks get built and constructed in front of schools, and there'll be a gap to the community. So that's the kind of thing these grants are meant to address. And then the non-infrastructure educational or bike rodeos at school or any number of things can also be done with that.
Ms. Allen, excuse me, we have a question. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And excuse me, Dr. Allen, I know that you're just getting to the budget, but we've got about 5 minutes to go here, and maybe there'll be another time to talk about this as well. But I do want to ask you a couple of questions about some of the facts and figures you have in here.
Sure.
Turning to your page 3 about bus service hours, there's some terms used in there about 80% of target met, or of need met, excuse me. And if I read this correctly, in 2007, we'd be meeting about 63% of need. By the year 2010, we'd actually be meeting about 56% of need. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the measure of need, if that measure of need reflects the aging population and other trends that you have on page 5, and then do we have sufficient funding to meet even 80% of need of these projections, especially given the 2% MVEST proposal in the governor's budget?
Ms. Allen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think you are accurate in your assessment of approximately where we would be. We worked with a national consultant it's been about 5 years now, to develop what we project as the needs. And we looked at population size and characteristics, density, the number of elderly, income, trip generators, that kind of thing, and also at our own systems and at peers in other parts of the country. I think, as you know, there's a lot of competition for resources, and the hours that are seen here reflect the funding that has come to the department through the federal funding and through the legislature. And I think that the legislature has made an attempt to satisfy these needs to the extent possible. During the last biennium, when MVEST revenues were not what they were forecast to be, Greater Minnesota did receive additional funding in the amount of $6 million for the biennium. And so I believe that this budget, which we'll look at the governor's recommendation, is an attempt to sustain the service in Greater Minnesota and to make possible a level of service that the citizens have become used to having.
If I may just follow up, Mr. Chair, Director Allen. So therefore, we'd be sustaining the lack of, the failure to meet the 80% need.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, these are extremely important services in Greater Minnesota, and I think there's a recognition of that fact. Again, I believe that this budget will maintain the level of service that is out there.
Any further? Thank you. That maintains the level, not any increase. Is that with the assumption with the additional monies coming from MFEST? You're assuming that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Maybe we could just go on to the budget recommendation. And the governor has recommended just over a half million dollars for adjustment for the 07 deficiency in MVEST. As I think everyone knows, it's a rather unpredictable source of funding, and our forecasts have not always been right on. So first off, we need about a half a million dollars for Greater Minnesota service as an adjustment for the current year. And then the governor has recommended enacting legislation to implement the constitutional amendment, 60% for highways and 40% for transit, and then a split in that, 2% for Greater Minnesota and 38% for the metro area, also including the sales tax on leased vehicles in the MVEST revenue. The charts that you have below that shows the amount of funding that would be available on a phased-in basis for the biennium. And you'll see that there is an increase. I would call your attention to what we call a 5% reserve, which is right around $900,000. And we think it's prudent to reserve this amount because we have not been able really to depend upon the forecasts. MVEST is performing below those on a pretty consistent basis. With this funding, I believe that we will be able to maintain the service continue to make grants that will, again, preserve what we have built, what a lot of people have put a lot of effort into in Greater Minnesota. That concludes my presentation. If there are questions, I'll be happy to try to address them.
Ms. Allen, there weren't any questions from anyone else? Actually, though, that you say you're preserved, and that doesn't address these six counties that don't have a system. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that would be correct. This budget would not permit expansion into those six counties.
Are they requesting? Do you have someone on a waiting list in counties that aren't receiving funding?
Mr. Chairman, I forgot to mention that we did add one new system in 2006, Otter Tail County. Otter Tail had been waiting for quite some time for funding, and we did receive some additional federal funds, which we used for that purpose. We have a number of counties that have expressed interest. If you look back at your map, you will see that we do have four or five counties that have expressed interest. We do not have any communities that are ready to put service on the street today, but if there were resources, I think we would be able to do that.
Yes, Ms. Allen, that's also an assumption that it's 2% from MVEST rather than, I see the governor has 38.2, and that's apparently going to be controversial. I don't know, but it sounds like it. Representative Housen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we should observe that the number that we had used and had some agreement around instead was 36.4, and was in our previous bill. And I think that across all those boundaries, I think that was the number we had all come to agree on.
Representative Housen, that's correct. That was kind of the unwritten agreement when they let the amendment come up. So that's, I know that there's some changes, not changes, but efforts to look at it differently. And the governor, of course, does have different already. So it does open up. And the bill will be before the committee, so we'll have a good debate, I'm sure. Are there any further questions or questions from Ms. Allen? If not, thank you very much, Ms. Allen. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. We really appreciate the opportunity.
And for the members, the next committee meeting, we will have the Metropolitan Airports Commission, or Council, excuse me, right, and review their proposals, basically. If there are any further questions, the meeting is adjourned.